Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We've got everybody here. Chris is here. Brooke is here. Purnell is here. Tim is here. And what the hell, Hockey's here, too. How's everyone doing?
What the hell, Hockey's here?
I mean, it's not quite Super Smash Brothers, but I'll do it.
You're welcome. At least you knew it was me.
This time.
No, I'm pretty sure it's almost exclusively me who burps really loudly into their mic. Because I do it on purpose.
Very nicely done.
Thank you.
Good shit. That's how to start off a show.
Yeah.
Thank me. Thank the LaCroix.
What flavor are you rocking over there?
The pamplemousse.
What's your fave?
That's money for grapefruit.
Ooh, very nice. The great poupon of grapefruit.
It's exactly. Just regular grapefruit.
Good mango LaCroix, however you say it, that's the top for me. That is the good shit.
LaCroix.
Do you have any grapefruit? But of course.
If you're willing to spend a slightly extra bit of coin, the stuff you want to get is freaking Spindrift. That shit is fantastic.
Spindrift. Oh, it's way too good. They started selling that at my Safeway. I've been guzzling like the blackberry one. That shit is good. They really figured it out. They're like, oh, if we put like a tablespoon of real fruit juice and 1 gram of sugar in here, it's going to taste really good.
Yes, it's amazing. It's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
and
it really
I am
is.
A fan.
What is
between
it?
That,
is it like a juice, a tea?
It's like sparkling water. It's like water. If LaCroix had like a tiny bit of juice in it, and it's like it kind of has this nice natural flavor to it. It's like what flavored water when we were kids is trying to be, but like the natural version of that. So instead of 0 calories and tasting artificial, it'll have like 15, 20 calories per can, and it's just a nice, refreshing drink if. You know, you don't want to do sugar or caffeine. You want to stay away from all the good stuff.
And what's it called? Yeah, Spindrift?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This episode brought to you by Spindrift.
Sounds like a fucking racing game.
One, you're absolutely right. Two, we just constantly endorse drinks for free on the show. Like, you guys liked out with me because I also love sodas and I'm a soda nerd.
Hey, you know what I'm drinking right now? Fucking water.
Oh my god.
Hey, I'm drinking water.
I drink Powerade
too.
Almost exclusively.
Nice.
It went through a Brita filter there. I can endorse that. So.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. See, nothing's free.
Yeah. It does. Great. Nice, delicious, filtered water.
Chris, what are you drinking? Chris isn't here.
Great antifreeze.
Chris is a damn. He's like, I cannot handle the soda talk anymore. They do this every fucking week. It's like, I'm out of here.
Well, I'm also opening Garbage Pail Kids right now, so who's that? Oh, what are you drinking? You're back.
Chris, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Red Bull, the green edition.
Oh my god, how is it? I haven't tried it.
Does it taste like green?
No, in fact, the color of it isn't even green. It's just in a green can.
It's not green. Oh, bullshit.
God, yeah. As a wannabe witch, if I buy a green drink, it better still look green when I pour it into a glass.
Flagrant false advertising.
Is it like green apple or something?
It's supposed to be dragon fruit.
Oh.
But to me, it's kind of watermelon-y. I don't know. It's that it tastes tropical. I'm just out of the standard Red Bulls, so I have gone for the non-standard ones.
For sure it contains no dragon whatsoever. None.
No.
0% dragon juice.
0% dragon juice. Well, I'm drinking Baja Blast, and that's 0% juice as well.
Awesome.
So.
Oh, actually, nice. Joe, you'll appreciate this, I think.
Probably, but...
So I, on one hand, the downside is my gym was like, Pernell, I keep telling you, if you want to drop some, weight, you need to stop drinking freaking soda.
Yeah, dumbass. Yeah, I believe I've told you that before.
Well, I mean, I already dropped it, but I drink it like once every week or so. He was like, no, don't drink it ever.
Yep.
But then the thing that you'll appreciate was that my comeback to that, jokingly, but he's actually right, is, but you all understand, I just found Purple Lightning Mountain Dew. It's exclusive to Circle K. Wow. I have to drink that because I did buy Purple Lightning while looking for Hot Ones Pringles. And I was very shocked, but I picked up a bottle because I have to know what it tastes like. But I won't know until later because I haven't opened it.
So make sure that when you cut out the soda, it's okay to drink soda if it's, like, rare. This has been Health Tips with Purnell.
Also, one thing about
store exclusive, that doesn't count. So
yeah, exactly. Doesn't count.
Well, for the store exclusive and I drink 12 of them, it totally does. But if I sample one, then that's not so bad. But I also, there's also the ability to just, like, water it down. I mean, you're still getting the same amount in, but if you water it, like, take, like, a freaking pamplemousse and pour a whole can of that into like a quarter of a bottle of Mountain Dew. There you go. I'm fine with that. You know, but I still need to cut it back very much so because my stomach's like, hey, bro, remember me. I'm trying to come back. I'm like, fuck this. No. So
I really need to kill the soda. There, I have stretches where I do really good and I'm drinking nothing but water. And then, like, something comes out, and I'm like, oh, I'll just grab a couple bottles of this. And so it's like, oh, I need something to eat during dinner. And it's like, oh, well, I'll just have one here, and I have one there. And now I'm
I need something to eat during dinner. Like, you eat the food.
Well, something to wash it down.
I was messing with you. I know what you
mean. Dry, delicious water.
Like, I mean, yes, but I get it.
Water with a meal, it doesn't work well for me. I don't know.
See, I drink a 2-liter every flavor.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. It may not be as good as soda or anything, but I mean, if you need help just kind of weaning off of soda, just use a freaking Mio or something.
What's a Mio?
So isn't Mio like flavored drink?
It's a Mio,
like,
Mario.
Did you plan this? Did you set Tim up for that?
Oh, it was perfect.
I felt set up. I did.
It was perfect. But in this case, Mio is like one of those like droplet type things that you add to like your beverage.
Doesn't that just turn into like Kool-Aid though?
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe if you put like 12 squirts into it or whatever.
That's
like,
very different from soda. I'm just throwing that out there. That is different from soda.
Oh, obviously, yeah, but the thing is, if you get, like, carbonated water, like, again, like LaCroix or something, and put, like, a shot of Mio in it, it's light years better than a soda, and though it doesn't taste like a soda because, obviously, it's not sugar liquid, it will still be better than just a water. Like, it's a good way to, like, say, it's not quite soda, it's not quite water, but it goes down smooth, and it feels like I got something sweet in me, so whatever, I'll take
it. Just get a diet sports drink.
No, diet, then again, I guess the, who knows, I know the squirts are probably just as shitty, too, but no, I'm trying to work for all of those,
saying
too.
Squirt.
I love that word. I don't know what the hell your problem is with it.
You ain't lying, because you are a woman of taste. Squirt is a great word. I say it all the time. Squirt.
I noticed.
Squirt.
He just keeps doing it. It's like Tim even asked nicely. He's like, stop saying squirt. And you're like,
I didn't ask nicely. Squirt, I asked squirt, bluntly.
Yeah. He was blunt about it. And I honestly don't need to say it so much. But, you know, I have to defend good words.
Such enthusiasm, too.
Well, you should be enthusiastic with that. But again, like, it's still, I feel like it's a better alternative if you're like, I just can't go straight to water. Okay, do the middle ground or something. It's not like Powerade. Baking or anything. Powerade, yeah.
Or Gatorade. Too,
but Mio's cheaper.
Actually, how much is it in a Mio?
I want to say I generally get it on sale for like $2 a bottle and you get like 50 shots out of it.
Okay, and you need what, like 15 to do that? Okay, it's a little cheaper than Powerade if you actually want to make it taste good.
You just squirt directly in your mouth, take a sip of water, swish it around. You'll be fine.
Right.
That's probably the only way it would work for me, but...
Oh, man.
Talk about games? We have a lot of games we got to talk about this week. We got some big titles to cover, too. Should we dive into these?
Bananas.
Well, admittedly, at least one of those big titles can't say much about it, so that's a convenient thing.
That sounded like a yes.
I guess so. First game to talk about tonight is As Dusk Falls, developed by Interior Night, published by Xbox Game Studios, released July 19th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $29.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass on Xbox and Windows 10. As Dusk Falls is an original interactive drama from Interior Night that explores the entangled lives of two families across 30 years. Starting in 1998 with a robbery gone wrong in a small town, Arizona, the choices you make have a powerful impact on the characters' lives in this uncompromising story of betrayal, sacrifice, and resilience. Brunel, tell us about your time with As Dusk Falls.
Yeah, is this any fucking good?
Okay, I guess I'll just answer that question. Yes, it is. At least I believe so. Because before going into the
moving
review,
on.
I did kind of come into this with a similar take that, you know, Tim's like, isn't it good? I mean, that was kind of the take I had going in. I started up the first time, was like, I'm not feeling this just yet, because the animation style is like, it takes a little getting used to, but once you get adjusted to it, it's fine. But it takes a little bit to get, it's almost like a moving comic. And once you accept it as that, it's like, okay, this isn't so bad. But I was like, okay, I'm going to set this down, go get some to drink, and, you know, break it and come back. And then when I came back to start playing it again, 7 hours just flew by. I actually played the entire game in one sitting.
Oh, wow.
Which did not expect to do that at all. But it did, which goes to show you that the rest of this review probably has the foregone conclusion. But the idea behind this game is that it takes place over the course of two books, which each is divided up into three chapters. You are playing multiple roles throughout the game. There will be situations, like each chapter, rather, will have you play two different, I guess, like time periods, so to speak, which each time you'll control a different character. It's funny how it actually does this the entire game. So just accept it and get used to it. But as you're playing it, it will kind of walk you through a general narrative that is taking place. And every once in a while, you will get a number of different options in regards to choices. You might say, be able to answer a question with a button prompt. It'll say, hey, what do you think we should do now? And it might be something like run out the door or run up the stairs or kiss my ass. I mean, you might get any of those things. And you have to make a choice, and that choice will determine, you know, the next course of action in the narrative. Sometimes it might be a consequential choice. Other times it might just be some flavor choices, and I kind of like
question.
That. 42.
Nope, that's not the answer, probably. I don't know. We'll find out. Is orgy any of the choices you can choose? Any. Even once. That's all that matters. I'm happy.
You son of a
disclaimer.
Bitch.
Disclaimer, you can never choose orgy, but god damn, that would be hilarious. But yeah, this so like I like the fact that they kind of, at least until you get to the end of a chapter, which I'll talk about shortly, they do a good job of kind of masking when the choices are going to have a genuine consequence versus just being flavor dialogue. And I appreciate that, because I hate when every choice is going to be important and you just don't know. And you kind of can tell, so you freak out about every little decision. But you'll have situations like that. Other times you might be exploring an environment, and as you're looking around the environment, depending on how you proceed through the exploration, that might determine if something happens in the narrative versus if you didn't find something. And when you walk around, unlike something like the Walking Dead Telltale games, you don't physically control the character and maneuver him or manipulate his figure throughout the room. Instead, you'll get a cursor, and you have to actually, you know, select with the cursor objects in the scene that you want to interact with, which I kind of prefer to an extent, because you're not, at least I don't know if you were or not. You might be, but I never experienced it. You don't feel particularly timed. It's more like, okay, you have a moment, do your thing. Sometimes the game will time you, like choices you'll make. It might be like 15 seconds to make a choice or something like that. But I can't think of too many cases where it was like, do it now or else. Other times in the game, you might find yourself in an action sequence where you have to fulfill some button prompts. You'll see circles on the screen, and over time, each of those circles will be filled in with a certain action. The game might ask you to rotate the thumbstick, or it might ask you to push a directionals button, or mash, or tap, or hold the A button on your controller. For the most part, I was good with all of these. I only ended up failing one button prompt towards the end of the game. And trust me when I tell you, I was fairly livid when I did, because it was actually one where I was like, no, I want to get this right. This is intense. But for the most part, the button prompts are fairly easy, unless you're really challenged with, like, do you utilize the controller? In which case, there might be an assist option, which I haven't checked for. But as far as the game goes, like, I didn't have any issues with the button prompt stuff. As you play through the game, you'll experience these different situations. The narrative will play out. And at the end of a chapter, you'll see a flowchart that will display all the choices that you made throughout the story. A flow of what each choice would have led to if you made it, though if you didn't make the actual choice leading to it, it's grayed out. So it's kind of like something like Virtue's Last Reward and how they did it. But in the beauty of it, they also display a percentage of how many people made the choices you made throughout your playthrough, which I really liked. That there was one particular situation that was pretty tense and revolving like a marriage dialogue where I made certain choices in it, and I was shocked to see that only 17% of the people playing the game did what I did. So I was pretty, actually kind of impressed with myself. Just like, yeah, I'm a man of heart. And then at the end of every chapter, they also kind of give you a sort of rating on like your play style and a few other things. They kind of like just explain like how you classify, like it might be like you're a quick thinker, or you're a person who seeks connection, or you think well under pressure, or stuff like that. So in that regard, at least, even if I said earlier that they don't particularly time you, maybe they do time you on some of the challenges, specifically because that rating says you make choices quickly. But as I played through the game, I was very much engaged, as you can tell by the fact that, like I said, I played the entire thing in one sitting, which I almost never do. But the narrative might mess with people depending on like what kind of stuff you're into, because this game does deal with some heavy stuff here and there. In fact, one chapter straight up warns you, like, this chapter involves suicide. If you don't want to deal with that, we understand. Let us know right here, and we will just kind of like skip over that part when it happens and give you the optimal outcome for it, so that you don't miss the story, but they don't make you engage the story bit, because
that's cool.
It's not, it's really nice. Yeah, like I was glad they showed that option or gave
it accommodations.
Like, I wish more games did that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more are going to start to like when they have like those kinds of like narrative bits, because different things hit different people differently. So it's kind of nice that they offer that. And this isn't like a game where it's like you're running around like shooting aliens left and right. So in this case, it's like it makes total sense to be like, hey, this is a narrative, but this is one part that you might not be comfortable with. And also they have, of course, the beginning of the game kind of give you some warnings like X, Y, Z. So you kind of know what you're getting into to an extent, too. Overall, since, like, again, I would have talked more about the actual story, but I feel like it's kind of a spoiler. The only thing that I can feel like I should really be saying is that you're, like, I think Joe said at the beginning, you're playing the role of various members within two families that are encountering each other on a fateful night after a robbery. That's the story. And it has some twists and turns to it, too. Like, there were definitely some cases where I was like, oh, crap, I didn't see that one coming. I got to change the way I'm perceiving this situation. Let's make a move.
And I think the important thing of all of it is it's engaging. Like,
Very much so.
I'm one of the people who kind of wrote this game off based on the art style when I first saw it. And I watched Carnage stream the game. And, you know, they had pretty much every section that you could interact with or choose an option in the game you could vote on through Twitch voting.
Oh, it's got one of those.
Yeah, so you could link your Twitch account to it.
I was wondering about that, actually. With the, when you did the voting, when the votes went through, did Carnage still have the final say, or did the game move solely based on the vote?
He didn't have too many viewers at the time, so I don't know how it would stand up based on how many votes there were. I mean, it's not like we're IGN here who gets hundreds of people watching. Like, we just get a handful of people hanging out. So just me and like two or three other people were voting, and I don't know how it calculated. I know it would bounce between them, and there is an option that you can override the game's decision, and the host can pick what he wanted. But I think it was limited to like three uses.
Well, that answers the question then. It sounds like it chooses the answer solely, aside from the override, solely based on the votes, which is pretty cool, because
I don't know if it chooses based on which is voted the highest, or if it just goes randomly between what's voted on.
It would totally be based on the highest. I can't imagine them letting you vote and then saying, well, the game chooses. No, it's going to be highest vote.
The most recent person who voted wins.
I can't imagine democracy working for the person who got less votes.
Fortunately, this is video democracy. It's different. Video democracy is different, I hope. But yeah, it's a very engaging game. To reiterate the point, I seriously spent an entire night playing it. I went to bed at 4 a.m. and got 3 hours of sleep, and I regretted none of it.
Wow.
None of it.
I got a query. I got a question. Sure. You play like any of the Telltale games, like Walking Dead and shit?
I played through the entirety of the Lee saga of Walking Dead.
Okay.
I want to play the others, but you know me and games.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds a lot like that in several ways. How would you feel this compares?
I want to say it's not as touch and go on the life and death in certain bits, and I also feel like you get a lot more choice in a direction for the story in this game. There are actual narrative blocks where you play, I believe you can die. And I say that because on the chart, I definitely saw some pathways where it just led to a block with no follow-up arrow or line going towards the further arrow of the story.
Nothing to see here.
And I will say straight up, without being a true spoiler, because I won't say who, but a person that I thought was going to make it absolutely died because of my choices. And I will say, in my defense, it was a choice that at the time, it made sense, because I was like, okay, don't be me, be in the narrative, as in, like, if I were that character being asked to do this thing, would it make logical sense for him to do it? And I was like, nah, don't do it, don't do it. I know you want to, but you shouldn't, and it was a bad choice. But even still, it still made for an interesting narrative, because it changed how the ending played out for me too, which was kind of nice, because it does have conclusions for a multitude of the game's characters, and they even show how many of those exist in the game too. So like one character might have like 6 different outcomes they can experience by the end of the game, depending on how you chose things throughout the game. And since once you beat the game, or even before if you feel like it, you can go back through and experience stuff anew. You know, just to be like, okay, I didn't like the choice I made here, or I did like my choice, but I really want to see what would happen if I did something different. You can just go to that node, start from there, and then make the different choice and follow the new story route.
Oh, that's nice. You can just jump around. Jump around. Okay.
Jump up again. Oh! But yeah, it's... All right. Enough of that. But no, this game.
Well, we got to jump to a conclusion on this game here. It's sitting at $29.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I genuinely believe it's worth every penny. I had a lot of fun playing it. Well, let me rephrase that. I don't want to call it fun. It was engaging. I wasn't sitting there like, I'm bouncing around. No, but I was very much engaged by the plot, and I wanted to see what would happen next. And again, I played it all the way through because I didn't want to stop. That, to me, is the highest praise you can pretty much give a narrative-driven game. I couldn't stop.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool. And if people aren't sure about it, it is available as part of Xbox Game Pass.
What's that? Never heard of it.
It's this thing that lets you like...
Is that like PlayStation Plus Extra?
Yeah, that's a good comparison now that you mention it. Xbox should look into marketing their service a little more like that. All right, well...
Give us 5 confusing tiers.
Jesus fuck, yeah.
All right, next game to talk about, Endling, Extinction is Forever, developed by Hero Beat Studios, published by Handy Games, released July 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Will a mother fox manage to keep its little cubs alive? Experience a world ravaged by mankind through the eyes of the last fox on Earth. In this eco-conscious adventure, discover the destructive force of the human race as it corrupts, pollutes, and exploits the most precious and valuable resources, the natural environment, day by day. Aki and Brooke, you two both check this one out. Brooks, how about you start off and tell us what is Endling?
All right, I'll start us out. This game opens up. You're a pregnant fox running through a burning forest trying to find a new home / a safe place to give birth to your fox pups. So already within like 45 seconds of the intro/tutorial, y'all know me, I was crying my ass off. That being said, after I was done with that, I got so sucked into this game. I had so much fun playing this game, and it was such an instantly addicting, just magical experience for me for a survival game. I literally canceled some plans I had so I could play it for a couple more hours a couple days ago. I was telling Joe that earlier. I was like, oh my God. Because it really got me. And, you know, I love that Purnell's review just talked about the difference between engaging and fun, because you'd think that, like, what I mean by fun here is engaging. And this game is certainly engaging, and that's what I like about it the most. Like, I love to be engaged and immersed, especially in, like, an environmental atmospheric survival-y game. But I would say this game was fun, too. Not every part is fun, and some parts are sad, but I had a lot of fun playing it. So, yeah, after you give birth to your four fox pups, they become almost like little party members for you. That's kind of like a stretch. I don't know if Aki will agree with that, but like, that's kind of how it feels to me.
There's a couple things I disagree with so far, but
cool. I'm looking forward to hearing you ding in. So you can customize how each little fox looks to an extent, and you all kind of go through the world together every day, trying to get enough food each day to live and make it home safe before bad things start happening. The morning starts, human whoops wake up and start coming out again. They'll learn little like moves and almost like tricks to help you strategize your way through the day. Each new day opens up stuff on the map, new encounters, new areas are available as you explore. There are different skills to be learned by you and your cubs. And no one playthrough is going to be the same in this game. You can't do everything. I started it a few times, actually, and I didn't play it through completely every time, but I got like really different results. There's a ton to do in this game. Totally out of context, no matter what the subject matter of this game was. This is just a really, really good suspenseful survival game for me. How are you feeling so far, Aki? Let's get let me switch off with you before I go too far into how else
fight,
I feel
fight,
about
fight,
it.
Fight.
this is gonna be good.
The beginning, I think, really tells you a lot about the game. The game starts with the not just you giving birth to your pups, but the very beginning is you running away from a fucking forest fire.
Yeah.
And if you walk around, you'll actually see what's causing it is people with fucking flamethrowers just torching it, just to torch it. Mm. They're not there trying to stop a fire or anything. They're torching it just to get rid of the forest.
Other animals are like running around. Cars are going to like almost run you over when you're crossing the highway. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, and that is kind of the name of this entire game. Every step of the way, people are fucking everything up and making life worse for everyone, because that's what happens when you destroy nature. Shocker, isn't it?
Yeah, I checked in with Aki yesterday, and I was like, how you doing? I'm over here fucking crying. I didn't even finish the game yet. And Aki's like, I hate humanity.
Yeah. I was like, this game makes you very sad, because you just... throughout the game, you have this environment that you get to move around in. You can find berries and, you know, animals that you can bring back to your pups at the beginning, because at first they're too young to leave your little burrow. It takes like 4 or 6 nights, something like that, before they actually do. And only 3 of them become your party mate, because one is stolen. That's the whole thing about the game, is you're looking for your lost pup while trying to keep the other alive, which is very difficult to do, because as I said, at first you can go out, you can find berries, you can find animals, et cetera, et cetera. It's not too very hard, but as the days continue, any animal that you've hunted is no longer there. A new one doesn't spawn in its place. And eventually different areas will become so polluted by people, because people are fucking trash, that any animals that were there are dead, so you can't hunt there at all anymore.
And then you might go back to the same places looking for animal holes and stuff, but you'll find bags of garbage and shit, and you can root through the garbage to try to feed your cubs morsels out of it, but you're almost rolling for a chance of getting your head stuck in a bag, which will cause like this little mini interaction where you're fighting the bag so you don't like die. It's pretty intense. I was wondering if you want to talk about the whole cub getting lost thing at the beginning of the game. I found that really, no, not lost. The cub is stolen by a poacher. And this happens like maybe within the first 5 minutes of the game. And so you start out with 3 pups, and then you start with 4, and then 4 you pups. Got 3. And let me tell you, when I say I started this game a few times, that's because when I started the game, I wasn't like sniffing around right. I wasn't used to the controls right, which is my bad. I just wasn't paying attention. The tutorial's great.
It's okay. It tells you enough usually.
Sometimes I get on the show and I complain about the tutorial, but this one, like, I think any mistakes I made was all me. Just gotta admit that. But yeah, so immediately, like, I lost the cub permanently. So that can either be a central part of the game. No. You know how you got the three white heads in the first one? If you don't get that cub the first day, you've only got three white heads of those cubs, dude. So, it doesn't have to be about it, but the game certainly, like, I'm so glad I restarted it, because it's almost the whole story of the game. You like hunt down clues for your cub, and it still would be a really fun game without that too, really engaging. So I found that super, super interesting. I have been able to play it through both ways, where you find the cub and where you don't find it. It's not like a huge challenge to finish with that story, but like that part's a tearjerker too, dude. I thought it was a really great way to bring the game together and give you a central theme and goal besides, survive every day and get back. You know, it kind of gives you something to like look forward to and think about, and it gives your character like kind of human feeling motivations, even though you're an animal, because anybody can kind of identify with that.
It so, also doesn't open up every single day more of the map. It's every time you get... Okay. Yeah, it's every time you get more clues for your to where your pup is that you can smell, because you sniff it out and you smell this poacher and you get this little picturesque thing that tells you generally what happened until you find all three of them for that day. But when that happens, it unlocks it. I guess that it just automatically unlocks everything if you just fuck everything up, I assume. Since you said
I wonder how that plays out. Yeah, I didn't play the whole game out through that. Before, like, I got pretty far, I was like, I think I want to go, like, the cub way. I think I want to restart, because it's not going to be hard for me to restart. I found, like, you know, I did play the first, like, 10 to 12 days a few times, just to kind of see where I could go on the map, and I found, like, little parts of the map would open that are, like, not a new area, but like one, you'll be walking down a lane and there'll be like a stump in the way and you can't get past. And then the next day I happened to go over there again because I was fucking lost and stupid. And the stump had kind of cleared away and I could go find like a new bag of trash. But Aki's like 100% right. You're not going to open up the bigger areas until the game progresses. So
I want to know why that log wasn't there the very next day. Because a log game.
Okay, that's a good... Ugh, ouch, man. So, you know, like, I know we're harping on like how sad this is. I found this game to be so like fun to play, so immersive, and such like a great environmental strategy game. I was going, like, before today, I was planning on coming on here tonight and being like, don't let the title of this game steer you away from playing it, because it's so fun. It's not too sad. You're gonna have such a great time playing this. But then a few hours ago, I finished the game, and I cried. I cried like for a really long time, more than I probably ever cried at a game. And Chris, of all people, is going to be hearing this and be like, oh damn, that's a lot. I pulled my partner over, who I made watch hours of the game, because I think it's just a great game. He's really into game design, and I was like, this is a really cool game, check this out. So he watched the first couple hours because he was intrigued. So I made him watch the ending with me, and he starts fucking crying. So it's a tearjerker.
So fucking depressing.
Oh, it was brutal. It's a double whammy. I'm gonna message you and like be like, that's not fair. So I'm officially coming on here tonight, changing what I was gonna say. But don't let the super sad title of the game steer you away from buying the game, because it is awesome, even though, as it turns out, the title does do the game justice, and that is what you're getting into. It's not the longest game in the world. I sure put over 10 hours into it comfortably. I don't want to give too many spoilers, but like, we know the title. And all I'll really say here is, if you're not getting the picture by now, it's a game set on Earth during climate change, climate war stuff. And you're playing as an animal in a highly stylized world. Veteran gamers will do the math. So get ready for some emotions. But like, in my opinion, 100% worth it. Like, I'm going to buy this game for a couple people I care about. And if I'd known
I know
how
were,
much...
You were trying to I'm gonna say buy you were going to buy it for me.
I want
to
make miserable. this game will make you sad. I'm going to fuck you with these friends.
I didn't think this game would get me so bad. I was playing a really sad anime game Sunday, and I stopped. And I was like, well, no matter what this extinction game is, like, it was Collar Ballast. No matter what this extinction game is, it can't be as bad as what I just went through, so I'll load this up. And then I was just like, oh my fucking God.
This is a small, furly animal. animal. Of course it's worse.
It was hard, man. Even going into it knowing what's happening. But I will say, like, even to people who may not want to have this experience, because it seems like a little much, like, don't do it on a rough day for you. Don't do it like the day that your wifey leaves you or something, but let yourself play this game. Like, I think this game is going to win a shitload of awards. Like, I'm just going to call it. Yeah, this experience will be a bit sad, but it'll be a treasure. This is one of the coolest games I've ever played. It's definitely in my top three survival strategy, like, suspense games. It's also beautiful. Hold on. Let me make sure I finish up talking about what I really loved here. Art design's going to win awards on its own, okay. But I think the game's going to win all kind of awards. For me, I don't know how this handled for you on PC, Aki. I think you played it on PC?
No, Xbox.
Ooh, okay. Well, it handled flawlessly for me on Switch. Like, everything was just really good.
It was perfect on Xbox, too.
Cool. As an entry aside of sorts, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I kind of feel like if at some point in time you play through Stray, I want to hear your take on the comparison, because, like, I've hearing all, you know, apparently Stray is like one of the current big talkers right now. I haven't played it, so I have no input on it.
Yeah. I'll just wait about 20 minutes.
I was going to say, you want to hear two people talk about it?
We'll get there.
Oh, okay. Like, that is.
Now, like,
did you
5 minutes
the lineup for the show? Come on, man.
I was telling Joe earlier, I was telling all y'all in the group that I bought Stray earlier today. I'm going to crack into this weekend. I'm really excited. And then, like, maybe 5 minutes ago, I tweeted, oh, it's animal surviving in a broken remnant of human society week, because we got Endling and Stray. So this is an interesting theme this week. But yeah,
Stray hasn't made me depressed, so.
I'm really interested to see what it's like. I haven't watched any streams of it yet either. I kind of want to go in blind this weekend. I'm so excited. I think it's going to be cool. But I was telling Tim that this is already a lot of people's game of the year, because none of those people played Elden Ring.
So, yeah, I can't imagine straight topping Elden Ring in experience.
I can't imagine it topping that, because Elden Ring's maybe just like the coolest thing, maybe the best thing that ever happened to me. Crying sounds come from my microphone.
Now, what if they put the cat from Stray into Elden Ring?
This is
How would it string the sword?
This is a mod that I will pay real money for. But yeah, wrapping up now. Just wrapping up my notes here, sound design's really good, adds a ton of atmosphere, really well done. I thought the sound design was exceptional. Accessibility-wise, it's like my final note. Accessibility-wise, I find this game to be pretty accessible. I think it's intuitive, even removed from other strategy games. Non-gamer gamers could play this one easy, but it's still really challenging as far as, like, the choices and strategy, just thinking it through, which I don't consider walled by game-specific skills. Both my partner and I were super challenged by this one, too, even though it is intuitive and easy to pick up, and it's exciting to play through.
Yeah, all I have to add to it is that your little puppies can learn their own skills. A part of it is also teaching them how to survive for when they grow up. And you get to random locations where suddenly they just learn a skill almost on their own. The game doesn't really tell you how to use that skill to teach them it completely.
Yeah.
Which drives me nuts. But that's a really cool little aspect of the game, because they start being able to help you keep all of you alive, which is really, really nice. And it is very depressing. Have fun.
I'm glad you brought that up, dude. Like, my cubs all learn different things. Like, only one of them would learn something at a time. I was wondering if you had the same experience or if I was doing it wrong. So I would have one cub, like,
they all learn something different. Yeah.
Just so cool.
And every playthrough is basically every one of the pups, like 1, 2, and 3, first one will always learn the same set of skills. Second one will always learn that same set of skills. The third one will always learn that same set of skills. The only thing that changes between playthroughs really are placement of, like, animals and stuff. But those change every night anyways, so.
I was sad I got, well, maybe that's a spoiler, but I had one thing happen to me in one playthrough, and then it didn't happen in the next one. I was kind of sad. I don't think it affects anything, but I'll slack you later and tell you what I did, because I think I lost that chance to do it. But it was a really neat moment in the game, and I always love that, like, that just really works on me when something happens to me and I'm like, oh, that might not happen in another playthrough. Or, like, even board games that have, like, card drafting, so no playthrough of a board game is the same each time. Even if I never end up playing it a second time, I just eat that shit up. I love that.
How long is the playthrough?
2 to 4 hours.
Okay.
If you're me, 8 to 10, but if you've heard, y'all know me.
It shouldn't really take you that long for a very simple reason. There's only so long that you can play any given day, because once it starts getting sun up, all the people come out and start trying to catch and stuff. So you actually have to go back to your little burrow every night. So you can only play each little day a certain amount of time.
I don't think this review's ever ending, is it?
No, it could last for a long time.
This is just where we live now in the review.
And if anyone wants to know how much I love foxes, I follow 2 hourly fox things on Twitter. So
that's awesome.
And if you want, you can check the memes in our Discord. I posted a cute fox there just today. Oh, so
cool. I'm going to check that out.
All right. Well, that is it for you two. Thank you so much for coming on.
You didn't ask me if I needed to buy it or not.
I thought you gave that answer already.
Yeah,
I had a note written for when you asked me, so now you gotta ask me.
Okay. $29.99. What is your official? Jesus, shut up, Aki.
Officially for me, this is buy it or I'll kill you, which would be an easier death than dying in the climate wars as an animal. Okay.
So it's a threatening buy it.
Yes. I'm also going to say, like, whether or not you finish this game in 10 hours or less, like I did, which would require dying a lot and restarting a lot of days.
I don't count that as taking extra time.
Yes, it's really escalated.
Over and over again.
I don't count any of that time. I only count the time when I succeeded.
Okay, word. Well, to me, like, I know that time, like, play hours to price is a big factor here. I know that's something that each of us consider when we're reviewing, but I was so impressed by this project that, like, I think it's worth more than $29.99. Like, I just think it's art.
Don't give them ideas.
We're gonna cover it.
I think it's worth less than $29.99.
I wouldn't say that because that'd be a lie too. It's worth what they're asking.
It's worth easily. $30 on the nose. Give them a penny. Come on. Donate that money to climate change. I don't know, you guys.
All right.
I had a great time playing.
Now you two are done. So I'm going to let you guys.
Go on. Try to usher them out of here.
Get the fuck out in.
No, don't listen to them. We stick around if you like. It'd be great to have you around.
I can always post more foxes because I have 50 kabillion of
them. Aki's going to post all the memes.
Ooh,
well, none of them are particularly memes. They're just cute pictures.
Oh, well then.
And since it's for cats, memes, and stuff, I'm going with the in stuff. Oh, okay. We don't have one just for cute shit.
Okay, I'll rename it. Edit channel. Cats and this is, cute shit.
There this we is go.
Happening in real time.
And it's renamed. Yes.
Oh my God. Cool.
All right, I'm going to post so many foxes in here.
This is a powerful legacy for both Aki and Joe. I'm glad I could see this happen.
All right, next game to talk about is Capcom Arcade Second Stadium, developed and published by Capcom. Released July 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5. $39.99 for the complete set, or you could buy them a la carte. Capcom is taking you back to the stadium with another collection of your favorite classic hits. Come see what's changed, what's completely new in Capcom Arcade Second Stadium. Tim, tell us about your time in Capcom Arcade Second Stadium.
I mean, not really much has changed other than the games. Like, the presentation is pretty much the same as the first one that I reviewed. I think it was this year.
I don't even remember when it came out. Might have been last year.
It might have been last year. It all runs together. You could tell me it came out 2 years ago. I'd be like, sure, okay. I don't think it's been that long, but there's two. Okay, I'm trying to get the games in front of me so that my brain will like half function. Holy shit, that got bigger. Yeah, so this is, you know, I reviewed Capcom Fighting Collection a few weeks ago, like the beginning of the month, and we were kind of, you know, it came up that, like, oh, some of these games are going to be reappearing later this month on this very collection that I am speaking to you about now. And so it was kind of like, you know, Capcom re-releasing everything. And the thing you need to understand is that, like, the likes of Capcom Fighting Collection, like, those games are much more curated. They are more feature rich. They have online play, which this does not. Pardon. So it is a just an overall presentation, better presentation of those games in that collection. And that is why that collection of 10 games is $40. And whereas this game, which is, I don't know, like it's 20 some games.
31, I think.
Yeah, even more.
Or
yeah.
32 with that pre-order bonus.
Yeah. These are, you know, ROMs dropped into an emulator on your console of choice, basically. And that is, you know, you are, there has to be an insert coin button when you fire up a game to begin the playing of it. It is not something you're going to be playing online. It is basically like, here is a way for you to have this game to play on your console. Yes, I am aware, ladies and gentlemen, the emulators exist on the PC. Thank you.
What?
But we are talking about this as it is released, at least in this instance, on the Xbox. So, yeah, it is $4 a game, or you can buy a collection. So obviously there is a certain break point there at which it, you know, somewhere around like 7 or 8 games where you should be thinking, maybe I should just drop the $40 to have the whole thing. And I have actually done this probably multiple times with Capcom games over the years, buying many of these same games as they recompile them and re-release them on newer and newer consoles. But anyways, yeah, some of the highlights of this one. Well, let's just go for the top. You got Saturday Night Slam Masters in this. I mean, that's a great game.
That right is there. An awesome one.
And I don't think that is one that they have released very often. You have the Street Fighter Alpha series is on here, at least, you know, well. But you have to keep in mind, this is like the bare arcade versions of Street Fighter Alpha and Alpha 2 and Alpha 3. This is not like the home versions that got more characters and modes and shit. This is the arcade ROMs. You know, we mentioned that, yeah, there's some Darkstalkers games on this, but it is just those ROMs. There isn't online play. If you want online play in your Darkstalkers, you need to go get that other thing. Hyper Street Fighter 2 is on here. Sure, whatever. But yeah, Gem Fighter, Pocket Fighter is on here.
The original Street Fighter.
Puzzle Fighter, yes. Good old fucking Fighting Street, which everybody always wants to play. Such a good game.
I had it on DOS.
That game is not good. There's a reason why everyone thinks the series basically started with 2. But yeah, there's a few like oddball things that I feel like I haven't seen, like Nichi's, this puzzle game that's basically like the predecessor to Puzzle Fighter before they painted it up with Street Fighter shit. And I hadn't played that before. I thought that was interesting. Rally 2011 is something I don't remember seeing before. Three Wonders I have seen before. Some of these, you know, Sun's on there. That's been out. Gunsmoke's on there. That's something they released. Black Tiger. This does have, Magic Sword is on there, which is cool. It also has the King of Dragons and Knights of the Round, which are a couple of,
cool. Those are also on the beat 'em up collection as well.
Yes, they are. They're on that beat 'em up collection. Again, I believe that is more feature rich with online play. It was been a couple years. I don't remember, but you know, being able to have this, you know, game for $4, you know, if you're just buying King of Dragons, is pretty cool. The Mega Man, both the Power Battler games are on here. That's pretty neat. Obviously, those have been on other collections and other places over the years, but it is, you know, it's a good variety of cool shit. Oh, 1943 Kai is on here, which is like my favorite version of like that, those games from the arcade. I just really like that one. And it has this like the same options as the first game, with kind of the what you have available to customize your view. Like you can actually have it on a virtual arcade cabinet and have it kind of pitched back in a 3D fashion to make you feel like you're in the arcade. But if you're not looming over it, like that effect doesn't really work for me. I'm just like, no, just have it flat on the screen. I don't give a shit. But you can customize the cabinets of the arcade, which is just kind of a neat little aesthetic thing to do. It does have move lists for the fighting games. I believe that is a thing I remember seeing in this. I've played so many fighting games recently. It might just be running together, but I'm pretty sure I remember that in this game. like looking that up when I was playing Street Fighter Alpha 3, because I think because I thought I was going crazy. It just turns out that my inputs were bad. Other things. I know Savage Bees was a good, neat shooter. Sidearm Speed Rumbler. Bunch of random stuff. I think I've touched on the more exciting things. But yeah, it's like if you are looking to load a bunch of Capcom games onto your Xbox for just kind of convenience sake, like, yeah, sure. Especially at $40, you're getting 30 games. Like, that's pretty good. But you just have to be aware that it is, you know, just wrapped in an emulator, like pretty straightforward. You know, nothing is shined up here. But even, you know, if you just want to drop, I don't know, $12 on a few of your favorites, get like Alpha 3 and Slam Masters and King of Dragons, not like the exact three I would buy if I had $12, maybe, 1943 would have something to say, I'm sure. But, yeah, you know, you could just grab a few a la carte and just, you know, whatever, you got your games. So, you know, you got options.
Cool. So $4 a game or $40 for this set overall, your official verdict?
You know, some of these games probably aren't worth $4, like, to be honest, but I'm not going to sit here and like
let's review every single one individually.
Yes, yeah, finally.
Yay, nay, nay, yay, nay, 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 yay. yeah, it's worth your $40 certainly, and some of the, like, you know, if you're looking at it as a game that you, if, like, I don't care how shitty it is, if it's something that is meaningful to you and you want to have it available on your Xbox, of course it is worth those $4 just to have it there. Yeah, like,
and if you want some free gamer score, well, it includes Sansan for free.
Yeah,
so you could just download the base game and play that and maybe buy something else if you want it. So
yeah, it has like some kind of overarching leaderboard point system thing going on.
I've never played Sansan. How is it compared to Ghosts and Goblins?
You know, I wouldn't recommend that game for $4. I'll say that. There's a reason why that's the free one, probably, really.
That's what I'm saying. Is that the same situation with Sansan?
Yeah.
Oh.
Tiger Road, not great. 1943? Yeah, I'm just going to start going through them, Joe, if you don't move on.
All right, next game is Stray, developed by Blue 12 Studio, published by Anna Perna Interactive.
Oh.
Available on the pss, 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 pss.
For $29.99. Stray is a third-person cat adventure game set amidst the detailed neon-lit alleys of a decaying cyber city and the murky environments of its seedy underbelly. Roam surroundings high and low, defend against unforeseen threats, and solve the mysteries of this unwelcoming place inhabited by curious droids and dangerous creatures. Chris, tell us about your time in Stray.
All right, well, Stray, this is, finally, the game where you play a cat with a backpack. That's the one that people have been talking about for, like, years?
This has been buzzed about for quite a while, and it's finally here, PS4, okay, PS5, so and PC.
I can tell you that I have talked about this game before when I created my top 9 cat games on the Switch list, which was in 2019. That's when I dropped that list. So that's how long it's been. We've been waiting for this game. It's still not on Switch, by the way, so don't, you know. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about it. Stray is a game where you play a cute little kitty cat, and it opens up where you are hanging out in a big pipe with some other kitty cats. The game, it does that clever thing where it kind of, like, it gives you the tutorial, like, kind of teaches you how to play the game by just letting you do whatever you want, but your gaze is, like, immediately put on the other cats, and so you go and interact with them, and you find out that, oh, this is really a game about cats. Like, you can do so many cat things that, you know, and it just keeps piling on. It's incredible. Like, you can go and snuggle with one of the other cats. You have a dedicated meowing button.
Yay.
Like all cats do. And, you know, should you so choose, you can really lean in on that.
You can make biscuits.
You can make biscuits. I was going to get to that, but that's okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You don't, you can interrupt my flow. It's going to be very disjointed. But then suddenly your cat is thrust, rather dropped into a closed off city, basically a city that has no skyline. It is covered up. It's dystopian future. This is a game where, thankfully, there are no humans. we are in a post-human society.
They've already ruined everything.
they ruined everything, and the cat survived. And so this is like the happiest ending possible, I suppose. You know, but still things are messed up. And as you wander around the garbage pile leading into this city, then, you know, you kind of start to realize that. And eventually you make it into this city. And again, the game is just constantly teaching you, like, how to do things. And so what ends up happening is that you're basically exploring. You don't pick up items at first because you're just a cat. You can't pick up anything. You can pick up things. You can pick up, like a little cup or something, like a bucket with your mouth. And set it down, and that actually is used to solve a puzzle. So, like, which is kind of great because, no, I'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, basically, because we're talking about this heavy story here. But yeah, you wander into this city, and you find out that you can't just, like, walk along the ground because, oh, the bacteria have mutated into giant fleshy monsters. Giant, by which I mean, like, the size of a golf ball.
They look like head crabs from...
They look like head crabs. That is the exact the exact thing that everybody's kind of pointed out in the streams and stuff, because I've already watched this game, like, on stream and YouTube and things like that before even playing it. But, yeah, so little head crabs, basically. Can gang up on your little guy, and this is not a fighting game. Your little guy is just a little cat. He's like a, you know, maybe an 8-pound cat. And so you learn how to run from away from these things and get yourself onto higher ground because they can't go there. They just kind of flounder around the streets, you know? So it's all about exploring and finding new things to jump on and new, like, ways to get into places that you're not supposed to get into, which is, again, like a cat. And eventually, you do get to meet some NPCs, and they are all robots. And those robots have, like, they've basically been around since humanity ended, but they're still going. Their faces are little monitor screens that do basically emotes, and they're adorable. I don't know how they managed to make something else in this game as adorable as the cat, but they did. And some of them are trying to help you, and some of them have hopes and dreams, and they wish to leave the city, but they can't because head crabs can also eat robots. And so the game becomes an adventure of you trying to get home, but also you're trying to watch out for your companions, one of which is a tiny, tiny little robot who basically acts as your sidekick and kind of helps you do the things that cats can't do, like read or use a flashlight. And this little guy lives in the backpack that he puts on your cat. And I am going to spoil one thing only because it's my favorite thing. And it happens within the first hour of playing this game, right? So it's not gonna, you know, cover your ears, I guess, if you don't want to hear the best thing in this game, in my opinion. when your little robot friend puts the vest on your cat, he flops over and doesn't move, and the little robot's like, oh my, are you hurt? And then he, like, gets up and hobbles around because cats don't like vests.
Yeah.
And then, like everything else, you just eventually recover and you can run around with the vest just fine. But when he flopped over, I had to call someone in from another room. I was like, someone else has to see this.
Now I have to see this.
Yeah, so that's the synopsis of the game. It's an adventure game trying to get your little kitty home and making friends with robots in a post-human future. Don't get eaten by head crabs and other things.
Tim, anything you want to add?
Yeah, it's a very pleasant, playable game. I mean, when we talk about comparing it to that freaking, like, tear-jerking, like, climate change, like... depression-a-thon earlier, like, this is not that. Like, I found this game, like, yes, there is the implications of of what humanity has done to the world, but it is pretty upbeat.
It's so cooled down.
Yeah. It's you're not seeing it happen. It's well after it happened. You're seeing the consequences and you know, what is left trying to deal with it. And it's, you know, more, you know, like the robots you run into aren't like, for the most part, like horrifically depressed. They're just kind of living their lives and trying to figure things out. And they have interests and hobbies and
they react to things that cats do.
Yeah.
Like if you meow at them and a whole room of robots, like all turn their monitors towards you, like things like that. It's lively like that.
Yeah. So
and, but, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it's a very easygoing thing to play. And I can see why if Brooke has seen a lot of chatter from people saying like, oh my God, game of the year. It's like, well, it's because people are playing it and it's easy to play. You don't have like a dedicated jump button. Like everything is context sensitive. So you're not just like your little kitty, like hopping all over the place. It's like, no, you can only hop onto ledges.
The closest thing that it is kind of a point and click and walk.
Yeah.
You push a button in front of a ledge. So there's no chance that you're going to being a human with thumbs, you're not going to make your cat walk off of like the side of a building and die or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, so the game isn't depressing. It's very optimistic. It's hopeful, actually. And it's in that way, it's interesting. Because again, robots have like in this have like hopes and dreams of one day seeing the sky. you show them like a picture of the sky and they're like, that's just, you know, nonsense. And some of them are, and then some of them are like, oh, that's a nice dream, isn't it? And like, it's so beautiful that way. But even though it's not depressing, this game will make you emotional. If you care about cats, you will latch on to this cat. And when he falls into this city, like, you'll probably be in like clutching your chest, you know, like you are going to worry about this cat. This cat is going to be everything to you. The little robot, who cares? You know, he's there to help your cat do things that aren't cat things. But like this story is like the genius of this game is that they focused so hard on making you believe in this cat as a little guy, as like a little cat that you have to protect. You, the player, have to protect him. So it's not. Again, there's not a bite or scratch button. Like your cat will react to things as that are dangerous, but you got to get him away from that stuff and keep him protected. And so, like in that sense, this game is really emotional. In that it triggers this kind of protective sense out of the player, I think.
Yeah. You definitely feel bad if you get gobbled by head crabs.
Yeah, don't get gobbled by head crabs.
And my child did start to like get sad when he fell, and I'm like, no, dude, the cat's fine. The game just started. Like the cat's completely fine right now. but the game kind of alternates between like when you're in the robot city, it is much more of a adventure, like deliver item A to point B, sort of deal. And then when you venture out of the little robot city, then it's more about environmental puzzles and avoiding horrible headcrab death. So it kind of goes back and forth between them. Yeah.
It's not combat free, by the way. There is some, but I'm not going to explain that very much because I think you should surprise yourself with it.
Yeah, it's later on in the game.
Yeah.
But I didn't find any of it to be, you know, it's very frictionless, I guess, is a way to say it. It's like the game's not pushing too hard back on you. Like everything was straightforward. Like I found it easy to like kind of figure things out. Like the robot city is dense, but it's not like sprawling. So you can't get too lost or too crossed up. Like once you get a general idea of the layout, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. And there's signs everywhere. So it's something that I think, you know, a wide variety of people can get in there and play. Like even my, you know, my idiot child started playing it. We'll see how far he gets in it. But yeah, and he did immediately unlock the trophy for meowing a lot. Go figure.
Oh, yeah.
First fucking thing he did. He hadn't even fallen down the goddamn hole yet. He hammered that meow button like a jillion times.
Oh God.
Sounds like he has embodied the spirit of my cat.
Yeah.
Well, should people hammer the buy button as much as your kid hammered the meow button?
Yeah, I honestly, I tried not to speak too much on this game because there is a lot to say about it, but it's really that kind of game that you have, it's an experience. This is one of those kind of games that is getting a lot of buzz right now, but next year it's going to be like, people are still going to be kind of talking about this one because it's, you know, while it's not mechanically doing anything like super new, and by the way, it's pretty short. It's a short game, but it needs to be. It kind of doesn't need to be a huge game.
Just wear out its welcome.
Yeah, exactly. I really think that this is like one of those kind of games that people are going to talk about how it elevates the art of video games, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of like Untitled Goose Game, you know? I got a lot of that vibe from it. Like, this is just so masterfully crafted, and it's kind of like indie, but also kind of like major. I think that you should buy this. I think that you probably will buy this sooner or later, so you might as well jump in now while everybody's talking about it. But this is a worthwhile game, a very, very articulate, like, you know, people have really focused on making this everything that it could be, and so, you know, that 3-year wait or whatever seems pretty worth it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And if people are on the fence about it, the game is available as part of PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium tiers. So save yourself $30 if you're a PS Plus Extra member and play it that way, or $30. You think it's worth it? Yes, Tim, your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, like, yeah, if nothing else, I chose to upgrade my PlayStation Plus subscription to the extra levels to get it. And just so you know, when you do that, it prorates it for, you know, up until the point where your subscription runs out. So my subscription runs out in 261 days or something specific like that, like in February. So my cost to upgrade to extra, which is normally a $40 a year difference, was only $24 and change, which is lower than the price of Stray. So it's immediately worth it in that sense. And now I get to kind of try out this this service that Game Pass ripped off, and see how that is. Though I can tell you, just to, you know, slight tangent here, it is hecking annoying that there doesn't seem to be a way to filter the game collection library between extra and premium. It just has them all in the same bucket. So I'll be like, oh, look, there's a game I want to play. Oh, it's premium. Oh, look, there's a game. Oh, it's premium. Or as my child put it, why is everything I want to play premium? I'm like, man, I fucking...
The retro stuff is locked to premium, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, well, it's anything that runs natively on a PlayStation 4 basically is in extra, and if it has to be cloud streamed, then it is on premium, and that includes like a bunch of PlayStation 3. That's basically like anything that would run on a PlayStation 3, so like PSP games and PlayStation 3 games and some PS2 games as well, I believe. Yeah,
I can upgrade to extra for 222 days for $24.44 or premium for $36.66. What do you think I should do?
I just did. Hey, you know what? You can do extra now and then look at what's in premium. And if you want to upgrade again, it'll just be prorated again. So, you know, you can inch your way up. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe it is a good way, I guess, to try out this thing that they're doing and just see how useful it is. I do hope that, like, this is the first game, like, new release game, you know, day one release, like, you know, Xbox does, you know, constantly, that Sony has done. I hope there will be more of these.
Oh, God, to definitely
enhance the value of the subscription, because even if it's like, if it's a game of this quality, like every couple of months, like, sure, that's fucking great. It doesn't have to be every single, like, Xbox honestly might be kind of overboard with it, but
every week that we're talking about new Xbox Game Pass games, I'm usually like, they added way too many games to Game Pass this week.
Yeah, it's just like, guys, calm down. I mean, you want to have a little something for everybody. I get it. You know, they're not everyone is lunatics like us that will just play kind of everything, but
you ever seen that gif of like that person like just dumping a whole big giant bag of cat food into this cat's bowl, and the cat's like excited at first, but then it starts cowering and it's like so scared because it doesn't know what's going on and there's
too much now.
Got too much food.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
Oh, man. All right, well, moving on. Next game to talk about is X Zodiac, developed by Ben Hickling, published by Pixel Jam, released July 21st on Steam Early Access for $9.99. A fast
so pace. So cheap. Buy it. There, jeez. Good night.
Let me get through the intro at least.
All right, fine.
A fast-paced, low-poly 3D rail shooter heavily inspired by the classics of the early 90s. Join the protagonist Q as she fights to free the worlds of the Sun-Zaru star system overrun by the intergalactic terrorist organization known as Zodiac. Tim, what's going on in X-Zodiac?
Well, what's going on is someone looked at Star Fox and said, I want to make that. And then they did, except in the year 2022. And it's fucking good. It is a polygonal corridor shooter. If you are familiar again with the game Star Fox, like you will be that is what this game is, except that it's
Star Fox.
And you can actually, I should say in the settings, you can actually have it look kind of like rough polygons like they would from like maybe 20 years ago, or you can just have it nice and sharp and running at 60 frames per second. And it looks like good as hell.
So you can turn it into Super FX Zodiac.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is by default, actually. It looks old. you are going through these levels behind your ship. Everything is relatively, by today's standards, it is low polygon. Enemies, you can lock onto them to fire missiles. You can do a barrel roll. Power-ups to pick up that will upgrade your lasers or repair your ship or give you more bombs. They knew what they were doing and they did it well. And for people that have been clamoring for this type of game, I think they're going to love it. And especially it's only $10. Like, come on. Even in early access, there's 6 or 7 levels available. And I don't want to, I guess I won't spoil it, but people should look, there are these little secret items that will drop in every level that will take you to a bonus level that takes after a different kind of corridor shooting game from the early 90s. So there's like a whole other game hidden inside the game. And each one of these collectibles you find unlocks a different level of that sub game. It is really cool. I was just like, wow, that's great, because they did one thing and now they're doing the other thing over here. I'm not sure how much they're looking to expand the game at this moment. Like, it is a straight linear path kind of through the star system you're in. I don't know if they're going to have branching paths like in Star Fox. I don't know how many levels they are going to add. Once you get past, I think it's 6 levels. I could be wrong. It's just like hey, we're constructing more levels for you. Come back later.
Well, the Steam page says that the full version of the game is planned to offer 12 stages or over 12 stages with branching paths and secret areas. And it's planned to be in early access for around a year.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I actually kind of had my eyeball on this game. I've seen some development clips on the Twitter for at least a year now. I've had my eye on it because I was like, oh, that looks like Star Fox. And I want that. So yeah, there's only, a half dozen levels in it right now. So sounds like there's going to be a lot more coming to the game over time. Usually I'm kind of a little wishy-washy, I guess, about early access games, but for $10, it's not bad to check out those levels and start playing around with it. It has that arcadey old school feeling where it's something you're going to replay for better score or just for fun, over and over again. I'm really happy with it. They really, I think, nailed it, with the look and the sound of it and just the whole thing. And also, I should also mention, not all levels are in the ship, and that's not even considering the the bonus levels. But they're I think it might be the last level in the existing game where you're actually on a motorcycle flying down a highway. So it has kind of a ground-based level like you had with the Landmaster tank in Star Fox 64. It's just again, pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff going on in this game.
Nice. So for $10, your official verdict is we should keep an eye on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, just buy it now. Yeah. If you want a Star Foxy game, you might as well just buy it. Like, get some money going their way.
It's literally one person who made this game.
Yeah, to that person.
It is. I love what single developers can do these days.
And check out that level, or check out the levels that are in it. Like, I think you'll have a good time. Like, how much time did I put in this? I don't have Steam open, because I actually opened Steam earlier and immediately started updating something, and then Chris started to sound like shit. So I was like, close Steam. I was trying to think. Yeah, I played like an hour and a half of it. Like, that's already not that bad for $10. So
yeah,
you know, yeah.
Nice. All right.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, Tim, that is it for you.
Oh, bless. All right. Time to go to bed. I'm tired.
Nighty night, Tim.
Yeah.
You have any, standing in for any, Brooke. Any final words?
No, I'm just going to bed.
Enjoy bedtime.
I will. Nap, nap. I go nap, nap.
Enjoy your bedtime.
All right. Next game is Hell Pie, developed by Sluggerfly, published by Head Up, released July 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5, and PC for $24.99. Hell Pie is an obscene 3D platformer that takes bad taste to the next level. The game sees you grab the horns of Nate, the demon of bad taste. He's given the honorable task of gathering the disgusting ingredients for Satan's infamous birthday pie. To do so, Nate must venture out into the overworld and do whatever it takes to ensure those ingredients are secured in time, or there will be hell to pay. Purnell, tell us about your time with Hell Pie.
Pie is what you describe from the narrative perspective. The adventure pretty much consists of Nate exploring both Sin Inc., the corporation which he works for Satan, as well as a number of interconnected overworld environments that are accessed by elevator. Initially, you're just in the company itself. You're being tasked with exploring the company to find access to the chef. Basically, the chef that's going to bake the pie to tell you what to do and what ingredients to search out. And that's where you also kind of get a grip for like the basic mechanics of the game. Well, some of the basic mechanics. It's a typical 3D platform. You can run, you can jump, you can dash, and you can double jump as well. However, after a certain point in the game, you are sent to the Netherworld supermarket to pick up your first ingredient, which is the second part of the sort of tutorial. I mean, it's still technically considered an environment to explore and find collectibles, but it's still them teaching you, showing you some of the ropes. And it's here that you gain access to your in-game companion, that being Nugget, the cherub. In this world, cherubs are used as pets on leashes to accompany demons for fun and just companionship. I don't make the rules, they just do it. To me, once you gain access to Nugget, that is when you gain access to what I believe is one of the best aspects of this game's gameplay mechanics, and that is the grapple system for this game, or the swinging mechanic, because it's not really grappling so much. Let me explain. So, typically in a game, a platformer, and if they have a grappling hook system, the way it works is you see an object, you throw your chain to it, it connects, and then you swing from it. In this game, Nugget is the latching point of the grapple. So instead of throwing it and connecting to an object, you can just jump in the air, throw Nugget forward, and he's your grapple. You start to swing from him. You can kind of propel yourself by holding the B button to kind of get like a speed motion going, and you let go and you go flying upwards or forwards or whatever direction, whatever position you are when you let go of the button. And if you have additional swings, you can do it again. You can just unleash Nugget again and go for another swing. Nugget also works as your attack option as well. So when enemies are approaching, you just throw Nugget at them and beat them like he's a freaking Belmont whip. Now, the thing I like about what they did here is due to the fact that you're not required to look for grappling points to throw Nugget as a grappling hook object, they designed levels to be fairly expansive and always kind of having that thing that you see off in the distance, which makes you go, can I reach that? Should I be able to reach that? I'll try. And next thing you know, you're throwing Nugget out, trying to get your distance out, trying to time your jumps and your spins and your swings in hopes of reaching the thing that you aren't sure if you're supposed to be able to make it to it or not. And a lot of times it turns out you can. I did find that to be very fun throughout much of the time I spent playing this game. And as you progress through the game, there are a number of typical collectibles. Aside from the logical statement I mentioned earlier, the obvious object being the ingredients for the pie, which are the things you need to complete the game and access new worlds, there is cherub food, basically dog food. If you find it and collect it, or enough of them, you can access more skills for Nugget to unlock in the skill tree. Skill tree itself isn't particularly expansive, but that's okay. It gives me what I need. You'll unlock additional swings. You'll unlock the ability to slowly recharge your swing actions while you're in the air. Those are the things I pretty much bullet trained for. There's other skills like getting things you can unlock, like additional health containers and dash upgrades. I ain't having none of it. I wanted more swing in my step, and I went straight for that. And it shows in my gameplay. If you look at my skill tree, it's like I never unlock the Nugget fart, whatever the hell that's supposed to do. but anything involving swings and swing charges, I unlocked them and went hard on that. You can, like I said, you can unlock additional hearts. You can unlock the ability to like kind of launch yourself straight up instead of forward in the swing using Nugget. And I found that to be, I loved getting more of that stuff. It was great because, again, it increased my mobility, which is what this game's bread and butter is. You can collect purple gems, which are kind of like Mario coins in that they're just all over the freaking place. And they kind of have the lamest use, but I didn't care because, again, collect-a-thon, similar to Mario Odyssey, you will find an NPC in some of the worlds, or pretty much every world, really. And if you go up to her, you can purchase new costumes for both Nate and Nugget using those gems. Also, if you die, you'll lose some of them to pay for your restart. But at first, I kind of was concerned that, oh no, this is my currency to stay alive in the case I die. But then I realized I have so many things that I will never, ever run out. I got to a section where I kind of kept falling and dying, and I burned through like 2,000 of them. But that was okay, because I had 12,000 of them.
Jeez. So,
whatever. In addition to those things, you can also collect cats. These little like golden cat statues, which are surprisingly hard to spot on the map, and yet I somehow still managed to find all of them. These can be used to unlock additional doors in Greed's Sin Chamber. Greed being the seven deadly sin. Greed, he's a person, is a demon that's meant to, you know, embody that. And lastly, you can unlock you can find little baby unicorn things. They are supposed to be used at horn shrines. Basically, locations existed in some of the worlds where you can spend a certain number of their horns to unlock additional horns for Nate. And when you use these things, it's a pretty mean scenario. If you're not good with like that level of humor, I'm sorry. But you got to mash the A button. And after you've mashed enough times, as you watch your little unicorn's eyes roll into the back of his head, Nate rips the horn off of many of them, killing them, and then throwing the horns into the tray to give as the offering to the horn shrine. Once you've unlocked a new horn, you can switch between them by holding the left bumper and using the right thumbstick to select them. And these basically give you new traversal powers, too. The sprint horn, for example, allows you to dash forward, where the arm horn unlocks sort of a, I guess call them grind points, you know, because every game has grinding lately. You can unlock grind points to traverse certain areas of the map. And they're actually fun to use, too. The game gives you like a sort of tutorial-like area after you unlock them to kind of show you the ropes of how they're activated and what they do. And, of course, once you've completed it, you get an achievement. So achievement people will love that. I found this game to be extremely addictive. The only thing I hate about it, and I can't even fault it 100% because even though we are in the year 2022, this is still a 3D platformer, and that is the fact that jumping scenarios can sometimes be a pain in the ass. Like, if you get to a section where you'll fall and die if you miss certain jumps, and you're kind of bouncing around to make them land properly, you're going to die a lot. It's just how it goes. I'm sorry. I don't make the rules, again. but despite that, and doing my bits of fuck, damn, shit, crap, all that stuff, I still had a fantastic time making it work. And when I got to the point I was trying to reach at the end, I smiled and waved and said, this was worth my time. If you were a fan of 3D platformers of the past, get down with this. You're going to love it. If you are not familiar with 3D platformers, you're like, huh, should I try this one? Yes, you should. The only time I guess I would say you shouldn't is if you're not fond of, like, dark humor. Because, again, you literally rip the horns off of unicorns to get horn upgrades. There's, like, areas where, like, for example, you come across, like, gluttons who are shoving food in their mouths and exploding from food consumption. Again, you're engaging with the seven deadly sins, etc., etc. You get the point. You're working for Satan. But if you're okay with that kind of stuff, and honestly I was, you'll have a good time with this. It's fun. Ooh. If the game weren't so long, I would have probably pulled a As Dust Falls on it.
Oh, geez. So $24.99, your official verdict?
Absolutely worth a buy. This is one of those games that I didn't expect to think would be this good, and it is that good.
Nice. I might have to pick this one up. This one sounds really cool.
The wet is Guten Tag.
All right. Well, next up is Blacken Slash, developed and published by Empra, released July 22nd on Steam for, I believe it's $4.99. I forgot to double check on this. Go me. A tactical roguelike RPG where the items you choose to find your character create powerful builds from an abundance of loot as you try to save a corrupted retro computer system in bite-sized tactical puzzles. Chris, what's going on in Blacken Slash?
It's $4.99, actually 10% off right now, though, so nice. $4.49 as of this recording.
So my believed price of $4.99 was correct. Yay.
You believed hard enough, and now it's the reality.
Oh, it feels good when I can make that happen. You're welcome, yeah. Everyone.
Hooray. Okay, so we're doing this review backwards, I guess, because we're talking about the price. But, yeah, so Blacken Slash, this is a roguelike strategy RPG that involves geometric shapes in a old ass computer. So what's going on here is that you play as Chip, a rainbow colored pyramid, and you are basically, you know, something's happening to the computer in which you live. You're talking to this other virtual guy. The thing is that a lot of the story and dialogue is couched in, like, 80s and early 90s computer terms that, you know, like, that are probably more accurate than something like, let's say, the show Reboot from the 90s. But
that was a great show.
It was a great show, yes, but it's that kind of incomprehensible, like, let's make puns out of, like, computer terms, of antiquated computer terms now. So... It's fun like that, you know. It's very tongue in cheek as far as that goes. So this computer seems to be shutting down. You know, areas of memory are going black, and you know, you basically are trying to escape with, you know, and try to see the world on the other side or something like that. I don't really know. The point is, you have to go through a whole bunch of levels and little, you know, quote unquote programs are, enemies in those levels, and you have to dispatch them using transmitters and data or whatever, basically weapons, and get out. So the enemies, so basically what it is, it's like it's harder to describe what the game's trying to tell me versus like what it actually is. So in reality, what it is that you start a run, and it puts you on a little grid, just straight up grid. It doesn't try to disguise it at all. It is like grid on a grid paper. And you start on one side. It's not quite random. It's more like randomly selected. But yeah, the enemies will appear on the other parts of the grid, and they are represented, you know, there's different enemies with different behaviors and different things they can do, like little pyramids that can shoot things at you, you know, there are cylinders that are a little bit blocky, you know, there's circles that are, I don't know, mostly they just kind of come at you, and if they happen to get a turn right next to you, then they can do some damage to you, and if they do enough damage to you, then you die and you have to start the entire run over. So the idea is to outmaneuver them and also, you know, to click on them before they click on you kind of thing. So you have a limited amount of moves that you can do that are spread out both across moving and using whatever weapon that you have. The weapons that you have are equipped along the bottom screen. You can have up to three of them and you collect them throughout the levels. So basically every time you win a fight, you have a chance to get like a new transmitter, which is, again, a weapon. And then some of them act as armor and some of them are like stat boosty type things. But the ones that directly attack enemies, there's three slots and you get to choose. You know, if you get three of them and you get a new one, then you get to choose whether you want to keep that new one and scrap the old one or, you know, scrap the new one. Literally, you basically recycle them for money units, which I don't even remember what they're called in this game, but they're money units. So basically, your weapons are going to vary. You'll be able to see like how they affect the grid. Some of them might be like a straight line in front of you for a distance, so that'd be like a distance weapon. Some of them will be like it can only go three spaces ahead of you, but it's like a better attack, or like it's an electro shot kind of thing. It might paralyze the enemy or something. Some of them are multi-target. Like there's actually like one that will do like basically a donut of destruction all on every single unit or every like singular square in front of, or sorry, all around your guy. So if you get surrounded, it's perfect. So lots and lots of weapons, and they're kind of like randomly drawn. But there are things called archive keys that you can also save up and purchase or sometimes find randomly. And if you use an archive key on a weapon that you have equipped, then it will survive the run. And you have the choice next time around of equipping that same weapon again, which, of course, if you die from that, then it will disappear unless you use another archive key. So there's some elements. It's a little bit like Sheeran the Wanderer in that way, right? There's a little bit of a storehouse aspect to it. And yeah, so it's pretty cool, like that it, you know, it's basically, like I said, it's turn-based strategy RPG. Each weapon will have a 1, 2, or 3 in terms of like how many turns it takes to use it. So, you know, some more powerful weapons might take more turns, so you get to move less when you use them. And yeah, apart from that, basically, it's all about like surviving the stages. The stages have different kind of goals in them. Sometimes you just have to wipe out the enemy. Sometimes the enemies will infinitely spawn and you just have to survive for enough turns. Sometimes it's just that you have to get to the goal in like 4 turns or else you die. And it's pretty cool like that. And as you progress through the game and unlock more levels and basically reach more checkpoints, then it starts to permanently unlock more things. For instance, after level 5, I believe, you get a shopkeeper that you can access between each stage, and for an amount of money, they'll heal all of your life. Which, by the way, you can find healing moves that you can use as one of your weapons. Basically heal yourself instead of attacking the enemy, which is great, actually, because in a survival game like this, that's perfect. But yeah, you can like purchase like a life heal, you can purchase an access key, which is, or sorry, is that what I said? Access key? Yeah. I think it is. Or you can like, you know, purchase, like sometimes you can draw like a transmitter set, which is like, here's 3 attacks and some other stat boosting things, but you have to equip them all at the same time, which is kind of cool too, because it's kind of like, you know, it made me think of, I don't know if you remember those old toy cartoon show like thing from the 80s called the Centurions.
I don't remember that one, no.
Well, it was like these soldier guys that had like holes in them and you would attach like weapons to them. And sometimes they would have like elaborate like vehicles and stuff that you would get attached to them, or it'd just be like, you know, a gun.
So looking it up on like, YouTube, and no, I've never seen this before. So,
oh, I had one when I was
new
a
to
kid.
Me.
Oh, okay. Well, you're welcome. it's one of those cheeseball shows, I think, from the people that made like the A-Team show.
Producer Larry Huber. I wonder if he's related to Chris Huber.
Oh man, I hope so.
That would
maybe
be
you can
amazing.
Well, that was just a little thing that this reminded me of. So, you know, if any old nerds are out there that remember the Centurions, that's a little bit like what the equipment system in this game reminds me of. But anyway, that's all that. Like I said, it's a roguelike, so you go through stages until you die, and then you repeat and try and get further the next time.
Cool. Well, the game is sitting at $4.99. What are your thoughts?
I like this one a lot, actually. I was surprised it's as cheap as it is. But then again, it's not exactly the most graphically impressive thing ever. It's certainly got some polish, but I mean, we are dealing with just geometric shapes on a grid.
Yeah.
It's definitely more on the mechanical side than it is the aesthetically amazing side. So, you know, bearing that in mind, for people who like strategy games and roguelikes, this will keep you clicking. So I'm going to give it a buy it.
Cool. All right. We got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Bricky to Me, developed by Idunasoft, published by Cubite Interactive, released July 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $3.99. Bricky to Me is a puzzle platformer that brings the idea of randomly arranged rooms to get through. Join the knight and a mysterious cat in a castle where the whole scenario is dynamically modified, creating rooms with incredible challenges to overcome. Pernell, what is going on in Bricky to Me?
So Bricky to Me is a surprise. If you were to look at the trailer, you'd be like, what the heck is going on? But once you actually play it, it's actually a fairly straightforward game. You're plopped down into a room, and that room has a door in it. Once you enter this door, you are sent into one of a series of rooms that you'll have to navigate. Your character can jump, and he can throw a boomerang. So, of those things, he'll be using those to explore each room, with the goal being to acquire a key, and then open the door that's also in the same room using that key. Now, the layout of the level is weird in that it will pretty much be static, except at the far end of the room you might see like a black void, but as you walk closer to it you'll see some blocks pop up and display the room. You might be thinking that this is randomly generating that half of the room, but it's not. It's just a visual display trick. So you're in a room, basically. However, in each of the rooms you spawn into, you may come across some levers that exist within the room. And if you walk up to them and pull the lever, some of the blocks that are in the room will change position to go somewhere else. Basically, ladders where there weren't ladders before, block platforms where there weren't block platforms before, with the cost being that the platforms that were in the previous place that were populated with the blocks that have just now moved are no longer there. So it becomes a matter of moving around the room, finding a lever, manipulating it, finding the key, using the traversal elements of that lever, and then going to the exit with the key. After a certain number of rooms, you'll spawn back into the main hub to do again for a certain number of times before the routine is over. However, there are a few things that you might want to be doing in the process of exploring these rooms. For example, if you're able to kill every enemy every enemy in a room, you'll unlock fish-looking icons, like either a fish or a drumstick. I can't even remember. And at the end of a series of rooms, and you're back in the main hub again, you can take food, and for every two, you can turn it into a coin, which can be used to purchase either hearts, which can give you a healing, or a potion. This potion allows you to, at the press of a button, shrink down to get into like narrow pathways that might be hidden on the map. And then the other reason that you might want to explore these rooms, aside from finding the fish or whatever, is the aforementioned coins, that are yellow coins. But then there's also blue coins. These are even more well hidden than the regular coins in the rooms. And
you to know that Aki is actively shit talking us in chat right now, saying,
wow,
she's saying
99% of the excitement in the show is gone and we need to be more animated. Fucking hell, get some coffee in your veins or something. Shit. I legitimately can't remember like the last two or three reviews. I was starting to fall asleep.
Okay, first and foremost, Aki, you have the most static fucking voice. You have no right to talk about a lack of fucking action and animation in a goddamn review sequence. Also,
number two, you could join back and just
anytime you want.
Yeah, like,
you left just to say nothing but text trash talk in a goddamn chat.
There we go. He's animated much better.
And my defense is I'm always like this. What are you talking about? Just because you're listening this time.
Curses. That was her plan all along. It's fucking sinister. Fucking sinister. So bricky for me.
To me.
Bricks. blue coins. You can find these goddamn blue coins. And if you can find enough of them, you can get a key, which will unlock a boss room or something. I never got the boss room because I never, on the run attempts I made, I never got all the blue coins necessary to unlock the key. Because once you do it a certain number of times, it'll just say, congratulations, as you run, and you can try again or whatever. In the end with this game, it functions, but once the gimmick became just hit a switch to move some bricks, I didn't have that same level of drive to go, I want to experience this and unlock everything that's here. Which doesn't make it bad. It just means that I wasn't excited about it. Like, I was hoping for something more than I got. But that is to say, I still hopped and bopped a bit. I wasn't, like, bored or anything. Oh, I didn't mention, because I got sidetracked by the, you know, the Aki-ism. the cat. There's a cat, too. You can pay the cat one of your health, your hearts, basically one of your hit that you can take. And he will appear somewhere on one of the stages, and his positioning will reveal to you a secret path, likely leading to a blue coin pickup. So the good side is you get a cool cat hitting that will show you a hidden route. The downside is you can take one less hit until you get enough coins to buy a potion of healing or, basically it, because, again, you sell the meat for money. So buy a potion, get your health back. Otherwise, whoops. End of the day, I feel like this game would not be Aki approved. So, whoop. But if you're not Aki, you might like the game because even for the free, even if you might find yourself kind of losing the interest for the click, because, I mean, by design, the game is meant to be played only a few runs, you know. Once you've seen all the permutations, you've had your fix. But it's a $3.99 game, so you'll get enough. I feel like you'll get enough out of it to justify that cost anyway. So I'm going to give it a try in this instance because I don't want to give it a fuck it, why not, because I did find it enjoyable until the gimmick kicked in. So you may well find enjoyment in this game. So I give it a solid try it review acknowledgement. Woozle wazzle. Insert colorful dialogue here to entice the masses. There you go.
All right. Well, that is it. We made it through this episode. I guess we got to be more excitable next time.
You know what? No, I think it's funny. Next time Aki's on with us, I think we should just rib her every time. Yo, Aki, where's your excitement? You got to get pumped. Get the pumped. I want to hear it every time.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
I'm going to go back to playing Live Alive.
How is that?
It is. Okay, so this game, I knew I was going to like it. Like, it's been recommended to me since, like, the first fan translations came out. You know, people have been talking about how great this game is. I false started it a couple of times, and I liked what I played, but I just kind of didn't stick with it. And now that I'm, like, actually playing it, I'm three chapters down now, and I'm like, not only is this, like, one of the best RPGs I've played from an era already thick with incredible RPGs, but this is exactly 100%, with taking nothing away and adding nothing, the kind of remake I want to see with all 16-bit RPGs from now on. Like, they need to take the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters and do them again this way.
I think they're doing Traveler style graphics, right?
Huh?
It's using the graphic style used in Octopath Traveler, right?
Kind of, but they fixed some of the what I would consider kind of issues with that style. Like, for one, 30% of the screen is not blurry now. Like, it actually only blurs when things are, like, really in the foreground or, like, really, really in the background. Whereas, like, you know, the entirety, I feel like, of Octopath Traveler had just, like, this petroleum smear over the majority of the screen. But it's not just that. It's, like, the way it does the animation. The voiceovers are incredible. The way everything is presented and is nice. And it's just like, I don't remember if it's the same team, but somebody's doing Dragon Quest 3 in this way. And I really, like, if this is how the remakes are going to be, I'm going to snap every single one of them up. So, yeah, I am loving Live Alive. And I already knew I was going to love it. And yet I love it more than I thought I would.
Are all the battles pretty much traditional turn-based battles, or do they differ based on the era you're in?
No, so the way it works is it's actually a lot like Black and Slash. It's it occurs on a grid. You move your character around and you have so many movements that you can do before the enemy gets a turn. And then you choose from moves that you learn as you level up, and they have their own grid, like in terms of like how they can attack the enemy. Some of them are like a diagonal line, a straight line. Some of them will attack everything on the entire map, you know? And you use it, and you know, then the enemy uses it. There's no limit. So if you have like a healing member of your party or something like that, then you can heal every single turn, and you will need to, because oftentimes these enemies end up with like pretty powerful attacks. But yeah, it's like a really fast-paced strategy RPG-style battle system where you don't have to worry about magic, because there's no such thing. You just use whatever move you think will get you through the situation.
Okay. No, I have to give that a shot. I mean, because it's sitting here, I'm just like trying to make sense of what game I should play when. Oh, no demo. I own it, man. Yeah. It was a Live Alive. Oh, okay. I had to get it.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah.
I call it Live Alive, too. I know it's called Live Alive. It just sounds too weird for me.
Funny enough, I always called it Live Alive. I actually had no idea either way. And then, you know, I was like, well, it might be Live or Live Alive or, you know, Live Alive. Or Live a Evil, since the second Live is spelled backwards in the game's logo. But yeah, apparently it's closest to Live Alive is how it's supposed to be, but it's whatever. It's whatever you want it to be, man. It's just a nonsense string of English words.
Pretty much.
Which is ironic that, you know, the RPG that Square Enix made that stayed in or Squaresoft. The RPG that they made that stayed in Japan, this, you know, out of all those, because there's a lot of them, this is the one with the most unpronounceable title, yet the title is in English.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Live a life.
All right, so well, that Squaresoft, is...
By the way, Squaresoft did not pay for... They did not provide a code, and they did not pay for that opinion. That's just me having plunked down my actual money for this game.
Yeah, and us asking for an opinion. And it just happened to make it on the show, which I'm going to wrap up now because it's been going on too long. So does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Make sure to live alive your life to the utmost.
With enthusiasm, or else Aki's going to bitch at us.
Yes, she will. She'll call you up and she'll yell at you. Very monotone-like.